You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Good morning, everybody. It is Thursday in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. My name is Adam Bittner, assistant sports editor for multimedia at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, joined as always by Post-Gazette sports columnist Paul Zeiss for our weekly Zeiss is Right video. Paul, how are you?
I'm doing good, Adam. How are you doing today?
I am great. Back in the saddle. I was out on Sunday. I watched Steelers-Ravens from a different location than I normally do, but good to be back in the saddle talking some Steelers with you. Paul, the thing I wanted to start off this week talking about was the Boo Birds around Pittsburgh. Yeah. They've been out for Matt Canada. They've been out for a few other people. So I want to talk a little bit about, is this a growing trend? What's going on with all of that? Before we do, just a quick thank you to our sponsor for this episode of the podcast, Pella Windows and Doors of Pittsburgh. There's no better place to get new windows and doors installed in your home than Pella, who can help you save on energy costs year-round. Schedule a free in-home consultation with your local Pella Windows and Doors to find the right product for your home and budget. Give them a call at 866-593-1560 to discuss your project further. That's 866-593-1560 to get started planning on your new windows and doors installation with Pella Windows and Doors of Pittsburgh. Paul, yeah, the Boo Birds have been out for Matt Canada. They were out at the game against the Ravens on Sunday. They were out at the Penguins game on Tuesday for their season opener. Some chance at PPG Paints Arena. And it's not the first time we've seen this in the last couple of years, or really the last year or so, Paul. Ron Hextall got the fire Ron Hextall treatment toward the end of his tenure as Penguins general manager. Austin Hedges got a large dose of boos from Pirates fans this season. And Phil Dracovic, the Pitt quarterback, no honeymoon period for him. He was getting booed by week three, I think. So what's your assessment of where the Pittsburgh sports fans stand? Have people become more hardened in the past year, Paul? Or are these teams just not as good as people are used to them being?
I think we've got a frustrated fan base here in Pittsburgh, Adam. I think that's the simplest explanation. They're used to the Penguins being one of the best teams in the NHL. They're used to the Steelers being one of the best teams in the NFL. Pirate fans are miserable. They're used to, actually, over the last few years, Pitt being pretty good. And they haven't gotten any of that this year. And so it seems to me like the fan base is frustrated because they're not winning at the level they're used to winning, especially, I would say, the Penguins and the Steelers. The Steelers are obviously 3-2. We'll talk about what that actually means, but they haven't played well, really, outside of maybe one half of football against Las Vegas. I don't know that they've really played well. I don't know that anybody really believes they're a Super Bowl contender. So people are miserable. People are miserable. They're frustrated. And the Penguins, they know, I mean, it's only one game, but watching them play, they know that this is a team it probably still has the same flaws it's had for the last 3 or 4 years, which means it's probably going nowhere in the playoffs. And, we're a town, probably more than most towns that you can think of, that we generate a lot of our identity and our self-esteem from basically how good our sports teams usually are. And right now, they're just not very good. And I think people are finally now showing their frustrations and they are they're letting it out. The one thing I'll say is it's pretty clear that Matt Canada is probably at this point taking a little too much of the blame for everything going on. But that's a part of it. When a fan base or, a media group or whatever decides somebody's the villain, it's bad for that person because doesn't matter what happens, the narrative is never going to change.
Paul, I wanted to ask a little bit about the inauthenticity that I think kind of runs through all of these situations. I think with Austin Hedges, the Pirates told us, they were lecturing us for weeks. Oh, it's great. He can hit. He doesn't have to hit at all. He can hit like a pitcher, and he's still adding value when you know, people plainly knew that was not true. The Steelers continue to stick by Matt Canada well after what I think, you know, his expiration date was. You know, there's much quicker hooks across the NFL, and the Steelers just seem to be devoted to this idea of, well, we honor our contracts, and so we can't let this guy go before he coaches through his 3-year contract. You know, and I think Pat Narduzzi dumped gasoline on the fire when he, you know, started calling this Boo City PA, I think it was, and kind of going back after the fans for being dissatisfied. Do you think that's part of this, Paul, is that these teams are acting indignant when they're faced in the face of criticism? I know Mike Tomlin said the right things about Matt Canada and saying, listen, we're in the entertainment business. These people pay money for these tickets. They can do what they want. But then their actions don't really back up that, you know, those words. So do you think there's an angle here where it just feels like the teams are kind of, you know, drawing a line in the sand against their own fans, and that is part of that's feeding this cycle of all these boos?
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously they don't make it any easier when they tell us stuff like Austin Hedges is good, and you know, when they act like we are the one, like Pat Narduzzi acting like the people that are sitting out there paying for tickets don't know what they're watching when they're watching a team that just isn't good enough and hasn't played well. Yeah, that doesn't help. I think people are tired of gaslighting. They're tired of, you know, and get frustrated by whether it's in politics or sports or whatever. They're tired of people telling them to their face things that they know are basically patently not true. And so that leads to frustration. I'm telling you, one of the most telling things about Pitt fans is the fact that 2 years ago they won the ACC championship, which is something I think a lot of people thought they'd never be able to do. And right now they all want to get rid of their coach. And a lot of it has to do with, it's not necessarily the fact that he, you know, that they're 1-3 or whatever, they are 1-4. It's because of a lot of the nonsensical things that he said in the last year that make it very clear he almost holds the fan base, you know, a disdain for the fan base. And he wants us all to know he's the smartest guy in the room. Well, that's not going to go over well with your fans. It never is. It's what you create a problem for yourself. And I think that's really part of the story as well. You just, you know, if you're not doing well or not performing well, just be like Mike Tomlin and say, hey, they paid her money. You know, if you've got a guy like Austin Hedges, you don't have to, you know, rip the guy because he's obviously part of your team. But don't come out and try and tell us that what our eyes are seeing is fiction, because it's just stupid.
Yeah. Or you just say, listen, we think he's got to play better. We think he can play better. You know, that's a simple way to diffuse it without telling people that they don't know what they're talking about. And so I'm completely with you there, Paul. I think it's a new brand of leadership for some of these teams. And I don't know if they know how to relate to the fans as well as maybe these teams did in the past. And like you said earlier, winning cures a lot. And the Penguins, the Steelers, the Pirates, and Pitt, you know, lately have not been doing it. So I think that's all part of it. Paul, I want to get a little bit more into,
you know, one other thing real quick I'll say about Pitt fans that's very frustrating for them is that Penn State's playing really well. And their team is not. And then, you know, a year ago or, you know, last year and a half or so, Pitt fans were, you know, all giddy and trying to make the case that their team was better than Penn State or whatever. And their program wasn't that far behind, or maybe, you know, well, that's probably a really hard case to make right now. So that's part of it as well. But go ahead.
Well, West Virginia is also, I mean, they're 4-1 and they're favorites this week against Houston. So if they get to 5-1, you know, they're in the mix in the Big 12 as we go into late October and November, which is what you want to do if you're a college football team. Paul, let's do a little Steelers talk and we'll get into some of these other teams and programs here after the break. What do you make of the Steelers at 3-2? With the offense that they have, I think you can make a case like that they're pretty much where we thought they would be when we were sitting down making our predictions in August, early September. That they were going to be right around that 9-10 win pace, and that's exactly where they are today. It's just on, you know, what's unfolded on the screen and on the field, I don't think has really lived up to a lot of people's expectations for improvement with this offense. And I think that's the source of a lot of, uneasiness, even if the results, the bottom line results are pretty close to what we were expecting.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
They are a 1-4 team that's been lucky, extremely lucky, and have gotten some really fortunate bounces, and they've been resourceful. You give them credit for hanging in and making plays at the end of these games. They're a 1-4 football team in my mind. And what I mean by that is, the Cleveland game was a complete, almost a fluke, but they got two defensive touchdowns. And, of course, T.J. Watt gets credit for making the plays. I'm not trying to take away that, but I think those plays don't happen if Kevin Stefanski isn't just a total moron in that game and some of the things he did in terms of trying to protect Deshaun Watson and some of the decision-making that Deshaun Watson made. And then this Ravens game is ridiculous. I mean, if you're the Ravens, I keep hearing about what a great coach John Harbaugh is. And every time I watch the Ravens, every time, right, without exception, they are the sloppiest, dumbest, selfish, most selfish, poor decision-making football team I've ever seen. And they should be 5-0. The Steelers should be 1-4. Instead, they're both tied at 3-2. So the Steelers, this last game against the Ravens, hey, they hung in there, right? They made the plays they needed to make. But, don't try and tell me that in the first three quarters the defense played well, because they didn't. The problem is the Ravens can't catch. If the Ravens make a few catches, or the difference, like I said, is the difference between Houston game, San Francisco game, and the Ravens game is the Houston and San Francisco receivers actually caught the ball in the first half. So they were down, 16-0 or whatever it was, and then, 20-7 or whatever it was at halftime, as opposed to 10-3. If the Ravens make a couple of basic, fundamental NFL catches and plays, they're up 17-3, and guess what? We're not talking about Matt Canada, not whether he's smiling or not in the press box, because that touchdown is irrelevant at the end of the game. So I feel like they need to get a lot better, Adam, period, on both sides of the ball, because, I feel like their wins have been a little bit just sort of lucky. T.J. Watt playing completely out of his mind in two of the, five games, and really in the Ravens game, he played out of his mind in the fourth quarter. I mean, really, if you think about it, the first three quarters, the defense wasn't great. The Ravens were stopping themselves. So they've got to get a lot better, because if they don't, there's enough bad teams on the roster that they can win games like they won. They've won these games where there's enough bad teams and bad quarterbacks where they can slop together, enough to win those games and sustain themselves and, get themselves to 9-8 so they never had a losing season continues. But if that's the new standard for the Steelers, then I don't know anything about the franchise that I used to know. They are not going to win in the playoffs playing this way. You're not going to beat teams with really good quarterbacks playing this way. You're not going to beat the best teams playing this way. The formula, obviously it can get you to 9-8 or whatever, but they have a lot of work to do on the offensive side of the ball. I think getting Deontay Johnson back will help, but still, they have a lot of work to do.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, you referenced the schedule. They don't face another team that currently has a winning record until week 15. And I think that could be key, Paul, and maybe making that difference between now and then of, can you be a team that can beat anyone come playoff time? do you see this schedule and say that's an opportunity for them to build some confidence, build some momentum the way they did at the end of last season when they, you know, admittedly also faced some teams that weren't very good and went on that 7-2 run to finish the season? Do you think we're shaping up in a similar way here where they can finally go through a stretch and say, hey, we have a lot to figure out, but we can figure it out and be a dangerous team by the end of the season? Do you maintain hope for that, or have you seen enough to suggest that there's just not a ton of upside here?
I mean, I think they can get better on offense. That's the key. But they, if they're going to get better on offense, you know, it has to be week after week after week after week after week. And then some of the teams that have losing record, I mean, they've got two games against Cincinnati, who looks like maybe they figured some things out in this last game that they played. Obviously, it was Arizona, but still, Joe Burrow has been so bad for the entire season. You know, all of a sudden, he looks like Joe Burrow again. Jamar Chase looks like Jamar Chase. So I don't know, you know, I don't know if their 2-3 record is significant from the standpoint of it's still early and teams are struggling to find themselves. But to me, I think, you know, for instance, their next game is against the Rams. The Rams aren't any good, but they're good enough. So you look at the Steelers and you say to yourself, you got a game against the Rams. It's a game we should be saying, wow, they should win that game. You know, they should win that game. I mean, they're better. But if I said, hey, Adam, put your mortgage down that the Steelers beat the Rams, would you do that? Probably not. You know what I mean? Because at the end of the day, I think the Steelers can beat anybody right now. They could lose to anybody right now. And that's what I mean about the way they're playing and their formula for winning. You know, you're 3-2. You're a 1-4 team that's been fortunate and gotten to 3-2. But if you continue to play the way that you're playing, you're going to lose games you shouldn't lose, and you know your record's going to be what it is. So that's all I say about that.
Yeah, and I think the Rams are one of those teams, Paul, that is a little bit better than expectations, and I think that's a big part of it too for people. Is this team better or worse than I thought it would be on the top line level? And going back to your point about them being a 1-4 team, they don't look better than we think that they are, and that's the problem with 3-2 is that it's. Even as they're atop the division and it's right about where you thought they'd be on the bottom line, it's just not been very pretty on the route there. Paul, should the Steelers be looking to the trade market for a center here? I believe the NFL trade deadline is October 31st. I do my weekly PFF grades. Mason Cole has been, I think, the obvious weak link on this line now that Dan Moore Jr. is out of the lineup. Broderick Jones has stepped in, proved that he's capable. If there's a move you'd like to see them make, is that the one, or are we going to go back to the well here with they could use another receiver?
That's the one I would make. I think finding a center at this point is difficult. You know, I don't know that they have another option on their roster either that's going to be better than Mason Cole. But I'm telling you, Adam, that's I've said the same thing for 6 months about what they need. And we've seen it. I mean, part of their offense's problem is I don't know that they have a whole lot of guys that scare anybody, and that's a problem, you know. And I'm not saying you're going to go out and get a burner or go out and get some, but you need to get one more good receiver, one more guy you can rely on. And so that's what I would do. I just don't think it's realistic to find a center right now that can, you know, do replace or be better than Mason Cole. You just have to hope that he gets a little bit better to the point where, you know, and maybe having Broderick Jones playing now, right? Maybe Siamalo gets a little better and all of a sudden, you know, they're able to cover up some of the deficiencies of Mason Cole. But I just don't know that it's really all that realistic to think you can change centers right now or even go get another center and it's going to work.
Yeah, Mason Cole ranks second in the NFL in pressures allowed. Not a good place for him to be. They need him to be better if they're not going to be able to address that in terms of adding someone else. Paul, last Steelers question I got for you here. Deontay Johnson's expected back for this Rams game. What do you think of what he can add to this offense? Can he make a noticeable difference? We saw him play, you know, I think back to that Tampa, those first couple drives in Tampa Bay during the preseason, how good he looked and how that was, you know, in addition to Kenny Pickett looking good, Deontay Johnson looked like his old self. Do you have a level of optimism that he can kind of be the missing ingredient here?
Well, he'll definitely help because I think the one thing he does is he runs pretty good routes, you know, and for the most part, he'll catch the ball. He's not a home run hitter, but he's what I'm talking about in terms of what they need at receiver, where he's a guy that can get himself open. He runs good routes. He's reliable. He's somebody that Kenny Pickett has, you know, a little bit of a rapport already with. He gives them a better player than, you know, when I looked out there at times in the Ravens game, I swear to God, it was Miles Boykin and Calvin Austin and some of these guys. And it's like, that's not good enough. If you have Pickens and Deontay Johnson, and then, you know, say your third guy is Calvin Austin, now all of a sudden you got something to worry about with Calvin Austin because, you know, they have to worry about the other two guys more than him. He's probably going to be, you know, manned up against somebody that's not good enough to cover him. So my point is, yes, it'll make a big difference, I think, having Deontay Johnson in the passing game, just from the standpoint of it will give them one more receiver who is really competent and capable of making plays.
Yeah, I agree, Paul. We are going to get into some Pitt talk, some Penn State talk, some MLB talk. Before we do, I just want to thank a couple more of our sponsors, Goldberg, Persky, and White. If you were diagnosed with mesothelioma or lung cancer, call your local attorneys at Goldberg, Persky, and White. For over 40 years, their firm has represented thousands of lung cancer and mesothelioma victims. Call 1-800-COMPLEX or visit gpwlaw.com for a free consultation. Also want to thank Propel Schools, Propel's 13 public charter schools in Allegheny County. Build a solid academic foundation for lifelong learning and offer more personalized instruction at every level during your child's kindergarten through 12th grade education journey. Give your children the quality education they deserve. Learn more and apply at Propel Schools by visiting propelschools.org. Paul, this is a big week for Pitt, I think. Christian Vaiu finally getting the call at quarterback, and you're going against a ranked team in Louisville. If you're going to make a push to make a bowl game here, you have to make up for that loss to Virginia Tech a couple weeks ago at this point. That was one of the teams you were supposed to beat, which means now you've got to beat a team you weren't expected to beat. You've got a new quarterback. You've got a new look to kind of throw at the Cardinals this week. What's the level of importance for this Pitt team in terms of, you know, if not winning, showing that you can compete with these good teams on the back half of their schedule? And B, what are your expectations for Christian Vaiu as he steps in for Phil Dracovic?
Well, I would say this. Didn't he say yesterday to pronounce his name Christian Vaiu? But anyway, that's the first thing. I don't know. His dad pronounces it Vaiu. He pronounces it Vaiu. So you decide what it is. Here's the thing, Adam. They have, what, 4 losses already, don't they? Cincinnati, Virginia Tech, West Virginia, and North Carolina. They have 4 losses. They still have to play at Notre Dame, and they still play Florida State. I mean, anything can happen on any given Saturday, but I don't see how they're winning either of those games, right? So if they basically have to win every other game on their schedule in order to get to, you know, be 6-6 and get to a bowl game, which means they have no margin for error here this weekend. You know, and if they play against Louisville and they lose, fans aren't going to want to hear, their effort was good and this and that and everything, because guess what? It means they're really probably staring 4-8 or 3-9 in the face. You know, and that's one thing I will say about Pitt. Throughout all of this nonsense that has gone on from, you know, the way they botched the firing of Walt Harris, to the way that they, you know, total comedy of errors after they fired Wanstead, and the hiring of, you know, Haywood, and then the hiring of Graham, and then the hiring of Chris, and then he leaves. And you had, all of that stretch. The one thing that Pitt has always done, really, if you look at it, they've basically been able to hang in there. They haven't gone to the 2-12 or the 2-10 or the 3-9. They haven't, you know, been completely incompetent. They haven't. The bottom has never fallen out. They had a 5-7 season, right? They had a 5-7 season when they had a bunch of stuff happen to them, and they had a ridiculously hard schedule. But other than that, they've been able to, you know, keep their head afloat and go to a bowl game every year for the most part. They haven't had the bottom fall out. So that's why this is really an important game. It's an important stretch for them. They have to be able to get this thing back on the rails.
Yeah, and I think seeing something, I'm going to go with Vayu if that's what the, if that's what Dad said. I saw Noah Hyles say that that's what he's going with. So I think, you know, you want to see Christian Vayu say, hey, even if this season isn't going to end where you want it to, there's a reason for hope. I mean, I think that's important too, Paul.
Yeah, well, absolutely. But the big thing about it is he's got another year, doesn't he? I think he's got at least another year or two.
Yeah.
So yes, hope would be the thing. If he comes out and plays well down the stretch, you know, and they, you know, they don't make a bowl game, but you know, they win some games down the stretch. Yes, you can sell that because he's coming back. You wouldn't be able to sell that if you kept Jerkovic in because he's not coming back. And it's like, well, you got to start all over again next year. So it'll be interesting to see how they play down the stretch now. Like I said, they are 1-4. They have 7 games left. They got to go 5-2 down the stretch in order to get to a bowl game. So, I mean, you know, figure that one out if you can. But especially when they've got Notre Dame and Florida State. But, yes, if they go 5-2 down the stretch and get to a bowl game and Christian Vayu plays really well, yeah, then you can sell the idea that, hey, next year we'll be right back at it.
Paul, some headlines up in Happy Valley this week as well. Penn State gets their new Big Ten schedules for future seasons. Lots of USC's, lots of Washington's, lots of Oregon's. It's very jarring to look at still. James Franklin also made headlines, Paul, because he was asked about throwing the ball deep and why doesn't Penn State do it more just for the heck of it? And why are they not trying harder, in the opinion of this reporter, to kind of replicate that 2016 offense when, you know, Trace McSorley was throwing nukes all over the field? And James Franklin basically saying, it makes my skin crawl when you ask that question. And, you know, if you talk to any quarterback, it's always about, you know, take what the defense gives you. Teams are not giving Drew Aller the deep ball right now. I think they're trying to make him make more technical reads, more technical throws underneath, rather than let him beat them with their arm. Do you think that's an accurate assessment? And is it a matter of, you know, he's going to have to learn how to handle those sometimes tougher throws to make, in the sense of finding receivers and making them quickly, finding them with timing? I mean, I think that's what's been disrupted in this Penn State offense is the timing isn't quite there, and defenses are going to force him to make those plays. How would you diagnose where the Penn State offense is right now?
They look like a team with a freshman quarterback who's kind of finding his way. And at times you watch it and you say, oh my God, this guy is really good. And this offense is going to be really scary once he gets on the same page with his coaches and with his receivers. And once he really sort of learns the intricacies of the offense, learns some of the things about, you know, how to counter what certain defenses are showing him. I mean, this is what, 6 games in his career, something like that. He's still learning. The question was silly in some ways, but James Franklin, of course, being James Franklin, made a total douchebag out of himself just by the way he answered it. You know, there's better ways to say what he said without going in the hole, you know, my skin is crawling and all this other stuff. But either way, when you have a freshman quarterback, don't care how good he is, there's going to be some stretches where the offense isn't yet clicking, because every game he plays is a learning experience right now. He's going to see some different things from defenses that maybe he didn't see last week or the week before, or the week before, you know, and I hearken it back to Kenny Pickett when he was at Pitt. You know, his first season was not always really fun to watch, but you saw he had talent and you kind of said, yeah, once he clicks and he figures it out, by the time he was, at the end of his career, his senior year, he knew the intricacies of the offense, the ins and outs. He knew how to attack defenses. He knew what he was looking at because he had basically seen everything. That's really what's going on. It's just you've got a freshman quarterback who's learning. And I look at that offense and I say 4, 5, 6 games from now, that offense is going to be really, really hard to deal with. Once this kid really gets comfortable, that offense is going to be really good, really, really, really difficult to deal with.
Yeah, I can see that. I think the big thing for me, Paul, is look at these Penn State receivers. You know, who are the guys you think are going to make some of those plays? Is there a Chris Godwin on this roster right now? Is there a KJ Hamler? Is there a Jahan Dotson? I think Keandre Lambert-Smith has been, you know, exceeded my expectations for him. He's been a solid number one, but I don't look and see a lot of guys that you can just throw the ball up there to and have a lot of hope that they're going to come down with it, even if you're calling those types of plays. Paul, also wanted to ask you about the MLB playoff format. A lot of people are freaking out because some of the better teams are losing. The Braves are in, you know, trailing the Phillies as we're recording this on Thursday. The Dodgers have already been eliminated. The Twins and Orioles have had great seasons. They're gone now. The Orioles, you know, were a team that had a bye because of this, you know, three-game play-in round, right. Wild card round. What is your assessment of what they should be doing with the MLB playoffs? I think, you know, I've always said that if you're going to have any round of the playoffs, it should be seven games if you want to find who the better team is. But if they're not going to do that, and they've always had like a five-game LDS round, do you look at that and say, you know, this is the way it's always been, just deal with it?
Yes, because here's the thing. If, you know, I can look at it, well, if they sit out a week, they get rusty or whatever. I don't even know what that means. The bottom line is this. You have the ability, if you have a bye, if you have a week off, if you have time off, to get your guys healthy, to get your pitchers rested, to get your pitching staff, you know, set up in the way that you want it set up. Guys got to go out and play. I mean, the Phillies went down to Atlanta, beat their best pitcher, right? They beat their best pitcher. The Orioles are a team that basically, I always thought this year that they were a team that probably were like some of those 90s Pirates teams, built for the 162, not necessarily built for the 7. And it showed, you know, and people that don't understand that, obviously you do, Adam, because you understand baseball. You know, there are some teams that are built for short series. And quite frankly, you pay Bryce Harper $500 or $400 million or whatever he makes to do what he's doing. Sometimes you just play against the team where a guy's just that much better. I don't want to see them monkey with it and change it and all that other stuff. It's good like it is. Leave it alone. Let these teams start to figure out how to win and stop crying.
Yeah, I'm with you, Paul. Like, I get it, especially in the case of the Orioles. You finally have a good year. But that's the reason, Paul, that you don't do what the Pirates and the Orioles and some of these small market teams do, is build up to be like good for a couple years and throw all your eggs in those baskets and go through these long rebuild processes to get like one or two shots. That's why you don't do that, is because right. When you blow it like this, it really feels like, you know, just a total waste of everyone's time. Paul, I know you got to run. Just a reminder to everyone, Christopher Carter is going to be back with the North Shore Drive on Friday. Plenty more Steelers talk heading your way this week. Paul, any final thoughts before I let you go?
No. Just got to get running. So we'll do it again next week. And we'll do it again, hopefully we'll be talking about a pit win, I guess. I don't know. I don't know that we will, but hopefully we will be.
Yeah, at least it'll keep things interesting for us, Paul. Thank you all. Thank you for stopping by, and thanks everyone for listening.
Thank you for checking out this content from Post Gazette Sports. If you enjoyed the video, please like it and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Check out our Apple Podcast channel for more podcast content. Click below for a special deal of 99 cents for a 3-month subscription to the Pittsburgh Post Gazette.